My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store.
Welcome back to an episode of the Bitcoin Magazine podcast. I'm excited to bring you another great guest today, a good friend of mine, Nate from Voltage. Nate, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Chris. Glad to be here. How's it going?
Doing well. I'm excited to talk about Lightning. While I have a very minimal understanding of Lightning, I think that I'd like to consider you one of my Lightning buddies or Lightning experts. Whenever I have issues or questions or concerns, I always go to you. So, Nate, I'd love for you to just kind of describe the Lightning Network in its simplest form, how it works, and then maybe we can go into more details after that.
Yeah, no, that's always a fun question to try to answer, because just like Bitcoin itself, you can have a very, very simple answer, but the rabbit hole goes very, very, very deep. But yeah, so for those that don't know, though, the Lightning Network is a way to transact in Bitcoin that doesn't directly utilize the limitations of the Bitcoin blockchain, mainly the blocks themselves, which are limited by data size. So it's really cool to be able to have a transactional layer on Bitcoin, such as the Lightning Network, to be able to have instant settlement when you're using Bitcoin as money. And there's also a bunch of other ways to use Lightning as well. But the way that the Lightning Network is sort of formed is just through a series of liquidity channels between nodes, which is just Lightning Network software, and how these liquidity channels just sort of ebb and flow in liquidity to facilitate the payments that's sort of transcended above the Bitcoin blockchain. However, everything is still tied to the Bitcoin blockchain, which is the final judge of the transactions that are done on the Lightning Network.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great breakdown. And I know many people have, tried to explain the Lightning Network as basically like, a bar tab. If you get, three drinks at a bar, you don't settle up till the end of the night. I know that other people have done it as like a web, like a spider web, basically. Like, let's just say you and I have a Lightning channel, and then you have a channel with your buddy Bob, but I want to pay Bob. I could pay you or pay Bob through you, basically. So, you take a small fee or basically a fractions of a cent or a Satoshis to basically route that payment from myself to our buddy Bob if you have a channel open with him.
Right. Yeah. And so what we're talking about is actually participating in sort of the actual Lightning Network infrastructure by running a node, which does require, as you say, deploying Bitcoin as capital to these channels to create this network effect. That is the backbone of the Lightning Network. But just like, email, right? You don't need to run an email server to use email. Mm-hmm. Anyone can download an app and use the Lightning Network right away. We've got a whole new generation of really cool user-friendly apps that have, come out in the last couple of years that are really cool. So, if you want to try the Lightning Network, you don't have to go learn Linux and do everything. You could do that, and I encourage that. But you don't have to you know, manage channels and stuff if you don't want to.
Yeah, no, I think that kind of sets up perfectly to my next point. Like Bitcoin's a journey very much for everyone. You know, you kind of learn what Bitcoin is. I know I even made the mistake early on in my Bitcoin journey buying it on Robinhood and then realizing I couldn't withdraw. So then I sold it on Robinhood and, you know, made it in a way that I could buy it. And then you kind of learn, oh, there's downsides to KYC exchanges versus non-KYC exchanges. So maybe if you can lay out the lay of the land, the difference between custodial Lightning and non-custodial Lightning and what the trade-offs are between the two, basically.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, so there's a couple scenarios here, but generally what we're speaking of is the mobile app experience, a way that you can divide up and categorize the mobile Lightning Network app landscape is, as you said, custodial and non-custodial. And custodial is, you're sending and receiving Lightning payments and you see on your on the app that it tells you your balance and everything. However, those on a custodial app, those sats are being held on someone else's node. And that is, risky, but you know, people are like, hey, it's quick, it's easy, I could use it. I have $20 worth of Bitcoin on there. I don't care if I get rugged. That's logical, you know, that makes sense. However, there is this sort of new generation of Lightning app that is coming out and on the horizon, I think, that is non-custodial and doesn't drain your battery like crazy, like the first generation of Lightning non-custodial apps did. Apps such as Phoenix, Mutiny just came out, which is a browser-based one. So it's still, there's still potential of risk on these. And then there's also Blockstream Green Wallet is going to have a Lightning Network, non-custodial Lightning Network component added to their app soon too. So I think we're really seeing the drive from developers to bring the user experience of the Lightning Network, not having to manage channels and stuff, but still get the non-custodial, I control my keys features.
Yeah, no, I think that was very well explained. So, obviously there's trade-offs when you're like you said, when you're using a custodial Lightning application or app, there's issues where basically you can get rugged where they're running the server and they can basically force close your channels or basically sweep your funds. Where non-custodial, you hold
it. I mean, even not even a channel, it's just a database and they just type in zero, gone.
Yeah, definitely. Where with non-custodial, obviously you're controlling it either through your own node or, you know, a lot of times, sometimes through their node. But Phoenix, they have a trust trade-off that's basically as you're opening the channel, you basically send it on-chain and they kind of open channels. And I guess there's a risk in between when sending the funds to when them opening the channel, basically, that they can kind of sweep it until then, if that's right.
Yeah, that's true. So, but the Phoenix in particular, you're still running a light node client on your phone. So when for Phoenix is a, you know, as we're talking about, you can generate an invoice immediately on Phoenix. Like you say, $10 worth of Bitcoin. I pay that, and what's going to happen is they're going to open up a channel, and if you pay them on chain, they'll open up a channel. So it's like you're still getting channels because you are running a node on your phone, essentially. So that's like the non-custodial part of that. And Mutiny is the same way. It's just a web app based one. The way that they're implementing Greenlight into Blockstream Green, though, I haven't got a chance to play with it yet, but it's entering beta soon, and I'm actually really excited about that.
That's really cool. Yeah, I've never really tested out Blockstream Green. I've downloaded it and kind of opened it up and kind of seen the UX, the UI, but I've never really tested with funds and stuff. So that's definitely something I want to do. I know also you and I were both at the Lightning Summit down at Bitcoin Park. It was a very, I don't know about you, I had an awesome time down at the summit. It was great seeing so many awesome Bitcoiners. There was about 200 people there. There was also an announcement from Evan Kaloudis of Zeus, basically saying that, for the longest time, he was kind of a node, non-custodial implementation, that a way that you can interact with your own node from your mobile wallet. But he's doing one of his announcements, or that was going into alpha or beta, was basically announcing that you could do exactly kind of like Phoenix, or not exactly, but you could basically have a non-custodial wallet on your phone through Zeus without needing to connect your own node. Obviously, there's trust trade-offs, there's privacy trade-offs. You're going to be using either his node or a node that they're connected to move funds. So you're kind of doxing your privacy there. But I think that opens up a good point. While the Lightning Summit was awesome, I really enjoyed it. It was cool hearing from the people like yourself and even a lot of the developers that were saying, like, Bitcoin, the Lightning Network has come a long way in its, you know, 5-6 year history, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So what were some of the trade-offs? Obviously, I know Tony Giorgio of Mutiny Wallet was one of the first ones that comes to mind. Like, you know, Bitcoin on the Lightning Network's privacy-ish, basically his way of saying, like, you can send things pretty privately, but obviously receiving, there was a couple web browsers that I actually have up on my phone. LightningDecoder.com as well as Bolt11.org are two ones that, like, it just shows you what a generic invoice looks like, and you could actually break down what each piece of the invoice means. And, like, this is doxing, you know, the amount. This is doxing, you know, the signature. This is basically the payment secret. Like, it shows, and I even saw this a couple months ago, Seth from Privacy, someone was like, yeah, just post a Lightning invoice from your phone or whatever. And basically Seth was basically like, yep, I can kind of see your IP. I can see the amount. I can see this. And then people were shocked. Like, they were under the assumption that Lightning Network, like, you're completely private, where that may not be true. So sorry for my long rant there, Nate, but I guess maybe if you can kind of break down to our audience some of the drawbacks to Lightning, maybe from the privacy standpoint, or things that we need to improve, or setbacks that it has right now.
Yeah. So this invoice, yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So when you say I request X Satoshis, right? A big blob of letters and numbers are going to pop up, and it seems like it's completely random, whatever, but it's not. It's completely decodable. You know, the amounts, whatever. Anyone who has this Bolt 11 invoice, and Bolt 11 is just a protocol spec standard for the Lightning Network, can see the public key of the node that is requesting the payment. So if you are running a Lightning node and you want to receive payment from somebody who you probably don't want to know your pub key, which also gives, you know, them access to go to somewhere like amboss.space and look up your total capacity, look up all your peers, look up all this other stuff that isn't in the invoice. However, you just need the public key, and now you can go look up pretty much everything on it. Not everything, though, thankfully, but pretty close. You know, maybe you don't want them to know that. So, like, what's the solution? There's ideas such as rendezvous routing, which is an old idea of trampoline, blinded paths. There's a lot of really cool talk around this challenge. A lot of folks will use actually mobile apps for privacy also. You know, Wall of Satoshi is the biggest custodial Lightning Network app, but if you receive a payment on Wall of Satoshi, like, you're not doxing anything personally about you to whoever is paying you, and that is because it is not your node. So yeah, I'll stop there just for a second. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, that makes sense. And I think, you know, kind of your point that there's a lot of ways or improvements that they're trying to do, whether it's trampoline routing, whether it's that. I know Odell kind of had a cool way of doing things. So normally he runs multiple nodes, and kind of what he does is he has a public facing node and then he has a privacy facing node. So for those listening, basically, he is one that he'll receive payments to, and it kind of docks his identity. And then he's got Lightning channels that bridge between the privacy-facing node and the public-facing node. So there's Lightning channels between the two. And then basically, you know, he kind of routes payments. You know, you pay the public node, and you kind of can see all the information there, and then he routes it over to the private node. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know Tony Giorgio is very good at, like, doxing or trying to figure out this, that he was able to basically maybe I don't want to misspeak.
So if you're advanced enough to run a node and stuff, you can, when you open a channel, you can choose not to announce that channel to the wider network. Back in the day, that was called a private channel. We're trying to use the term unannounced channel now, because, as you mentioned, it's not really private. You know, private, the word private assumes a 100% guarantee. I don't know, just like you would think, right? But if it's private, it's private. You know, if it's kind of private, it's not really private. So you're not announcing it to the network. However, there's ways to sort of ping fake transactions throughout the Lightning Network, and like a sonar sort of, and depending on what, you know, what happens, you could sort of slightly detect, oh, there could be an unannounced channel, you know, between these two peers.
Yeah. And that was kind of your point that like Tony kind of figured out, was able to basically do this with pinging and basically sending fraudulent payments or payments that don't go through to figure out like, oh,
and I don't want to say ping because ping already has like a networking definition. In Lightning, we call it probing. Yeah. But I was just using that as sort of like a sonar analogy, though, kind of.
Yeah, no, I like that. But basically, he was able to figure out that Odell had another node with non-public, unannounced channels with another node. He was basically not able to figure out exactly the liquidity, but the about liquidity between this unannounced channel and the public-facing node that Odell
had. Yeah, and another solution that is being worked on is Bolt 12, which is, you know, the hope is that someday that will transcend Bolt 11 and bring with it all these benefits and stuff. But I guess to boil it all down, this specific topic, it's like everyone, all the developers I know are aware of the issues and they are working very, very hard to implement the correct changes, especially at the spec level. You don't want to mess up the spec level, because that is where everything else is built on. So the Lightning Network is really, really important to get right. And so that's why there is a lot of debate and stuff. And sometimes a little bit of a slow ramp up to these changes. But I think over the last couple of years, we've seen progress. And I think that's going to keep happening. So just to let everyone know, I think it's going to get better. This isn't like set in stone that your receiver is always going to be like, you're always going to be able to tell, you know, what the pub key of the receiver is. Another actually cool little, just real quick, is there are, and I guess we could talk about this later. So I work at Voltage and we have a product that's brand new where you basically, if you don't want whoever is paying you to know what your node is, you could give us the invoice and then we'll give an invoice that we generate to whoever you're, you know, back to you, and then you could give that to whoever's paying you. So we can do this non-custodial sort of swap thing. And it's really part of our liquidity service that we have. But if you don't need a channel, we're not going to open up a channel to you. We'll just facilitate the sort of the payment thing. So the person that you're giving the invoice to thinks that they're paying Voltage. Or they, if they decode it, well, they think that they're paying you, but the invoice you give them decodes to Voltage instead of decoding to your actual node. So there's like little workarounds right now. It's not perfect, but hopefully the actual spec changes will come soon.
I have not used this feature, so I need to. So then people are going to think I have the beefiest Voltage node they've ever seen until they use Amboss and figure out that basically it's not me. But that is very, very cool. Well, so I guess that this kind of leads into my next thing. You know, obviously, I think you're pretty bullish on Lightning. I'm pretty bullish on Lightning as well. Obviously, I think there's work to be done and it's not, you know, it's not a finished product. It's something that's still being built out, but I'm pretty happy with where it is. You know, we're hovering around 4,500 or 4,600 Bitcoin in Lightning network capacity at this moment. I know it's kind of down a little bit. We definitely broke 5K a few months ago. So I guess maybe the first question was, I know that you just had a video recently, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if it was Bitfinex that was basically pulling down liquidity. And this is something that you're like, this isn't a bad thing. This doesn't mean that they're bearish on Lightning. But maybe you can give a high level overview of why someone might close channels or open channels. Obviously people open channels to pay people, but they had one of the larger nodes on the Lightning network. And they were closing channels and it was kind of like a mass closure at least a few days ago. And they did one earlier in either June or July as well. So maybe if you could break it down, kind of describe what it was and what you're seeing basically.
Yeah. So there has been some pretty large Lightning nodes that have been closing channels recently. And if you don't have a decent grasp of the Lightning network, that might seem pretty scary, right? Pulling down channels, you know, that means less pads on the network. That means more likely your payments are going to fail, et cetera, et cetera. However, folks like Bitfinex who have multiple Bitcoin in size to the same peer multiple times, like I don't know, they had like 8 channels to Bitrefill with 2 Bitcoin per channel. And although we can see the total size of that channel, but we can't see the movement of the funds. You know, that's hidden away from the outside, right? But you know, you could still sort of think, you know, maybe they were a little bit too You know, when the Bifinex node came out, that was years ago. It was like brand new, you know, Lightning was brand new. They were probably like, cool, let's go, go, go. Let's open up a bunch of, you know, big channels and everything. And then maybe over time, it's just kind of like, you know, either that liquidity got used up or the channels just, maybe they were like, maybe we need 2 channels instead of 10 channels with this peer. That's perfectly okay. That's not messing with the network at all. It's not messing with routing at all. If the amount of channels doesn't necessarily matter, it's the amount of channels that are being used efficiently. So like if I open up 1,000 channels to you, Chris, but you and I both don't have any other channels to the wider network, are we helping the network? No, right? But the amount of channels go up, so that's good for Lightning. Not necessarily. And I know that's kind of an extreme example and it doesn't really cover, but all I'm trying to say is the amount of channels are important, but the amount of channels that are between peers that are actually facilitating payments are more important than just raw channels and stuff. And the thing about the Lightning Network is we don't know what the transactions per day are. We don't know a lot of information about it. So we're using what metrics we do have to sort of deduce, you know, how Lightning is doing. And I think that, you know, if you're running a node and you have a channel, no matter what the size is, and you're like, you know, I've had this channel for a year, it hasn't really been routing for me, I haven't really been using it, why do I even have it open at this point? Like, I should, you know, we could redeploy it somewhere else or just close it down temporarily and whatever. So I, and like I said in that video you mentioned, it's just my opinion. We have no idea, really. But I still think that, I mean, it's just my opinion of their reasoning. However, I think that those that understand the Lightning Network don't think it's that big of a deal. It's a lot like when sort of maybe hash rate goes down a little bit. It's like, yeah, that stinks, but, you know, Bitcoin still goes, you know. I don't want to get too crazy technical on that, but it's okay. Okay.
Yeah. So then I guess this leads me to my next question. I was going to bring up that it kind of seems to be there's a few ways that the Lightning Network's building out. And to your point, it's kind of like one of those things that like Bitcoin will propagate and live on regardless of how this pans out. But I'd love to get your ideas on it. So obviously we have larger liquidity providers like Async, like Cash yeah. App, like Strike, like River. Those are the ones that come to mind with like large Lightning liquidity. I'm sure Voltage is up there as well. But to your point, I've seen recently with Cash App, and I was kind of doing some just, you know, high level heuristics, like they basically only open channels with, they put restrictions on who can open channels with them. But a lot of times they're only approving other like large Lightning liquidity providers. And my point is basically, it seems that they're only approving like KYC centralized exchanges. I couldn't just, me as an individual, couldn't just open up a Lightning liquidity between me and Cash App or something like that. Whereas like if you and I open a channel and then like we open it up other channels to other peers in the Bitcoin community, like we can make a more robust, resilient, I guess that's the best way to describe it, resilient, yeah. Non-KYC, non-state approved Lightning Network. I guess that's the way I'm trying to get at. So I guess what are your thoughts on this breakdown of like the larger exchanges kind of only dealing with larger exchanges versus you and I?
Think there's two things there. One is, all right, I'm Cash App right now and I want to facilitate Lightning. So what am I just going to allow anyone on the network to open up any size channel they want to my node? I could do that. But then option two is, and I'm not a lawyer or whatever, but there could be like, you know, their lawyers could be like, hey, listen, you can open up channels to if they meet this criteria, but who they open up channels to is fine, whoever, right? So like my personal private node, I could still pay a Cash App invoice from my private node. So it's getting there from somewhere. So somewhere in that path is a node that Cash App approved to have a channel with them, but also they have channels to the wider network in some way. So I think it's just like this one degree of separation thing, maybe, that they're doing. And honestly, that is kind of okay. And honestly, if you're trying to optimize running a Lightning node, it might behoove you to try to create a path between, or, you know, create a channel that with a node that has a channel with a node that has a channel with Cash App or something, right? So you can help sort of funnel that liquidity into Cash App, even though Cash App itself doesn't allow just anybody to open up channels with them. There's still, you know, a couple hops down that might not be the case anymore. So it's, you know, it is what it is, I guess, but that's kind of how I would think about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good explanation. And I think it was even you when I was first, you know, kind of dabbling in Lightning back in 2020, 2021. I was trying to, you know, at first you're testing, you're like, oh, like maybe I'll open like 10 channels of like 100K sats. And I think it was either you or someone else that was saying just on Twitter, like, you're better off having larger channels for Lightning. And the issue that you can kind of see more recently when fees start to run away, and then there was some issues with LND. This is not a critique of them, that like channels were accidentally getting forced closed by accident, or they were getting closed because of the runway fees. And then basically like you and the peer that you're with are like disagreeing what the channel is. And then there was a really high fee into high fee environment in order to close the channel. So you can kind of run into issues where if you don't have larger, beefier Lightning Network channels, you can get into a lot of fees and stuff like that.
And that's a good point. The large is relative, and when folks are trying to figure out what size of channel they should open up with, the value comes from whatever their on-chain payment to open is.
Yeah.
For example, if I plan on buying an Amazon gift card every week for 10 weeks, should I open $100 channel every week, or should I open up a $1,000 worth channel once right now and get all that value sort of in that first on-chain transaction? That's something that folks will have to think about, because as like you said, a high fee environment, you know you're going to reach a point where you know what I'm saying? Like, why would I spend $20 on chain to open up a $20 channel? So it's really sort of like think and then think about how long you're going to want to have the channel in an ideal situation. So it really just comes down to the value of on chain. And that's why, you know, when we had one sat per V byte for a long time, we were just opening up channels left, right, center. Who cares? You know, it's not a big deal. But that's slowly beginning to sort of change, I think, and people are getting a little bit more picky about it. And you know, one of the cool things about running a Lightning node is you can set it to automatically reject when other people try to open up a channel that is below a threshold that you define. Like, I can say I only want channels of 5 million or higher, and if you try to open up with me, it'll tell you can't do it. I think we'll see more of that as the years, right, go on, because I personally think that we may not clear the mempool someday.
Yeah, so, no, I am definitely
I'm on team, that side of the fence.
Yeah, I'm definitely on team. We may not clear the mempool. I don't think it's now, but I mean, it remains to be seen. Like, I do think we'll eventually clear. But to your point, I think we will be at a point where it will never clear, and you'll have to use things either like replace by fee in order to get things, like whether it's a channel or a transaction through that needs more immediate versus one that you can just leave in there for a longer time. I guess I want to hit one more thing before we go into kind of like, I think that we were talking at the Lightning Summit once again, very awesome. Recommend everyone go to Bitcoin Park to check it out in Nashville. But one of the things that we saw recently when obviously the fees were ramping up, we saw issues with LND closing channels. And I heard mixed things. This is just hearsay, but I heard mixed things about people saying that, you know, they were kind of using this private public key pairing of like they own both Lightning channels. And then there was issues where nodes were closing Lightning channels when they didn't want to, or I guess it was a bug in LND that was causing this. Maybe can you speak to this about the issue with the forced closures by accident and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I'm not, you know, like I'm not a spec dev or whatever. So like pretty much what I hear is just what I hear also. But just the way that the safety of channels were designed, right? If you've got payments that aren't going through or whatever, or you disagree with your peers about the state of the channel, there are security mechanisms built into the Lightning Network to shut that channel down in order to prevent any sort of malicious
activity, even if malicious activity isn't happening, it's just a security mechanism. And when your channels are small in a super high fee rate environment and the reserves are changing, your node or your channel could have what's called stuck HTLCs, and it could trigger these things. But you know, shortly after that whole, you know, few weeks of craziness, Lightning Labs decided to lax that just a smidge, which I think has helped a little bit. So this is specifically about LND I'm talking about right now. But I know that they released a version update to address those issues. I'm not sure exactly what they changed on that, but they did release a version update pretty quickly after that to sort of help mitigate those sort of spontaneous force closures, which nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, and exactly. And it was good reason too. Like, I definitely see from their side of things, like, you, the worst thing would be is if you were kind of draining liquidity from my node and then you were able to, you know, basically steal money from me. And then, you know, my node force closes the channel to prevent this from happening, or from preventing it from getting worse, basically. So it was very cool that they relaxed that. So when we were talking at the Lightning Summit, I think this is very cool. You were kind of saying, like, obviously you want to, Bitcoiners, you want to have a low time preference. You want to build things for the future. You want to have something that lasts a long time. I'd love to give your take of basically saying, take 10% of your Bitcoin stack and then splitting that into 10 and kind of opening up Lightning channels. Maybe this is self-promotion. Yeah, so
this is my controversial hot take or whatever, but and this kind of goes back to preventing centralization or whatever. It's like, we are many, right? We are the node runners. And it's my opinion that if you're a Bitcoiner, you're comfortable holding your own keys, you might run a node, you might use something like Sparrow connected to your own node to validate your own funds and stuff. The rabbit hole doesn't stop there. And I think Lightning is a really good next step to take in the Bitcoin journey. There is a real need for more Bitcoiners to run Lightning nodes and be incentivized to do that. So my idea is, I feel like when people look into the Lightning Network, they start getting sort of like, oh no, this is like a lot, right? How to do circular rebalancing and your channels and blah, 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 blah. And I believe in a more simpler approach where you just open channels to nodes that are decent, and then don't worry about doing atomic swaps and buying channels. Don't worry about inbound. And just slowly sort of spend it and replace. Because one of the really cool things about running a Lightning node is every time you spend out of it, you get inbound liquidity I would call it a kickback in a lot of ways, because having inbound liquidity is actually very valuable. And so, you know, you spend a little bit until you need another channel, then open another channel, you know, spend a little bit, buy some groceries, whatever, open another channel. Don't worry about rebalancing and all that stuff. It's not a big deal. But over time, you might start seeing, oh, I'm routing payments, and oh, you know, I could do all this stuff. And then before you know it, you're running Lightning Node Connect custodial wallets for your friends and family and getting them onboarded with stuff, which is actually really, really fun. I just think that it's only as complex as you want it to be. You don't need to sit there and monitor it and min max it and do all this stuff. Just run it, connect it to Zeus. When you're at Bitcoin Park, buy a bottle of water with your Zeus, get inbound liquidity as like a cool little kickback for spending. And then before you know it, you might have a ton of inbound liquidity depending on how much you're spending and over time. And now, instead of just opening up a channel, go to Amboss Magma, open a channel and get paid to do it. Now people are going to pay you to open up a channel with them. You can still spend. So you get this really cool sort of income over time. And, you know, you don't have to brute force it. It's just sort of over time.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. I mean, I think it's very cool, like saying it's like a kickback or almost like a rebate. Like, yeah, you're spending out. Yes, you're spending sats. But to your point, like spend and replace. But then you're also getting a valuable Lightning Network node, and you can basically, like you said, use Amboss or other things to sell Lightning liquidity to people. And that'll become valuable in the future, at least we perceive, as the mempool fills up over time. And as it gets more and more expensive to do things on the base chain, it pushes people into higher layers.
And like you said, though, I mean, I use this idea. It's like 10%. Well, I don't know, right? I just, you know, obviously you don't want to throw your whole stack into Lightning and go crazy, right? But like I said, you know, if you just sort of calculate, like, what kind of, like, how much money do you spend at Walmart every month or whatever, and just open up a channel of that size at the beginning of the month, and then buy a Walmart gift card from the Bitcoin company or BitRefill or something, and then you got inbound liquidity. And, you know, like I said, over time, then you go to Magma, you sell it, 3% APR on average over there right now, which is pretty cool. You know, you're not going to get rich or whatever, but it's better to get paid to open up a channel than it is to just open a channel, I think.
No, yeah, I completely agree. Okay, so speaking of, like, pushing into other layer twos, I'd be remiss to not bring up ARK. I know that everyone was, you know, the podcast circuit, everyone was having a Barak on. I think Barak is a very talented developer. I'm not taking anything away from him.
Barak's awesome.
Is awesome. I guess many people are disappointed that he's going and making ARK. I mean, it's Bitcoin. You're free and open source. You're able to do whatever you want. But people, like, I know I saw a couple Lightning developers basically saying, like, you know, Lightning is so far along and it's here and it's working and it's now. Where ARK, I mean, I know he really released a white paper for it, but, like, there's no specs for it to my knowledge, and it's not operational yet. So it's very cool and futuristic, but, like, it's kind of like always 2 weeks TM. But, like, this, a lot of people project it's going to be 2 to 3 years before ARK even really has, like, an alpha or a beta running. So maybe what are your thoughts on ARK or competing?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm in the ARK Telegram. I skim it every now and then. I'm not very active or active at all, really. I think that the best idea is going to win. I think that those who think ARK is going to come out soon for even testing is gonna be wrong. I don't know. And like you said, the Lightning Network works now. Lightning Network has very specific defined issues. However, I think probably all of the big issues, some of which we talked about here today, there are solutions in the pipeline for. And the Lightning Network is the layer two to beat, if ARK is to compete with the Lightning Network or even integrate with the Lightning Network, as some ARK folks have said that, hey, you know, the Lightning Network can actually work with ARK also. Cool. At the end of the day, though, if you were looking to run a Lightning node and then you heard about ARK and you're like, you know what, I'm going to wait for ARK, I think that's a terrible decision. I think participate in Lightning until something is actually better. I don't think playing a wait and see is a good idea. And that's just me. So everyone could do whatever they want to do. I just don't want people 3, 4, 5 years from now to be like, gee, I really wish I started that Lightning node back in the day.
And I think, Nate, this is kind of like a problem, not just with Bitcoiners, but even no-coiners I see, like, perfect being the enemy of good. Like, you know, is it better to buy non-KYC sats, which you run on Sparrow, on your own node, and all of this? Absolutely. But versus, like, oh, I didn't buy Bitcoin because I got scared because I don't know what was going to happen. And, you know, oh, I'm waiting for it to go cheaper. It's like, no, like, you're better off getting in at a higher price, messing around with a little bit amount. You know, maybe using a KYC exchange, not that I advocate for that, but you're better at least getting your feet wet or, like, learning about it first and then kind of improving or increasing your setup. Yes, would I love everyone to dive in headfirst into non-KYC sats that they open up Lightning channels with while running their own node, you know, over Tor? Like, yes, that's the perfect case scenario, but, you know.
And the thing is, too, and this doesn't, I mean, this kind of goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that Bitcoiners that are running their own node connected to Sparrow, they have their cold cards and stuff. They're in this for the future. They've got the low time preference. They're saving this right. They're educating themselves. And I think that the Lightning is sort of going down that we are trying to change the path of humanity, right? Out of this centralized, insane
fiat
trajectory, fiat world that we've been on into something that we would want our kids and grandkids to live in. We might not see the future that we're trying to build right now, but our grandkids will tell their grandkids that, hey, you know, Grandpa Chris was a part of that back in the day. And I think that I just, you know, I don't really have a hero complex or whatever, but it's like, we all need to play our part a little bit, and we all need to just keep learning and keep working and keep educating and keep encouraging, keep teaching, and just keep growing as people that want to live in a better world.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I guess I'm gonna do two more questions as we wrap up here, Nate. This has been a great conversation. Honestly, I could go for hours, but I don't want to bore the audience.
So, oh, we have off the record, but yeah, go ahead.
So I'd be remiss to say if I didn't bring up splicing. So obviously, Dusty Damon's been working on this for at least 2 years. We were talking about building out the future, low time preference. Dusty obviously did the first splice. I believe it was at Bitcoin 2022 on the open source stage. He actually brought up at B23 and was like, yeah, like I think the last splice was, or the first splice was in February or March. They're like, no, it was in April. You actually had a tweet, and they pulled up the tweet from the conference of like, just did my first splice on the open source stage. But obviously we just saw Async, or the ones that run Phoenix Wallet, just integrate splicing. Obviously it's in a beta right now. Obviously Dusty has a grant from Blockstream, and I think he also works at Blockstream. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to integrate it into Core Lightning. So what are your thoughts on splicing? If you can give a high level overview for the audience of what splicing is, and then what you see it improving with the Lightning Network, that'd be great.
Splicing is amazing, and I could go on and on for a long time, but I'll for those that don't know. So if I open up a channel with you, Chris, for 5 million sats today, we cannot change that 5 million sats. You can't add another million to it. You can't take another million out of it. Splicing changes the game on that, where now I can open up a channel with you, spend it all through the network, and instead of being like, oh, I really liked having outbound liquidity with Chris, I need to open up another channel with Chris. Instead, now I could just plug in more Bitcoin into that existing channel. That's the sort of high level idea of it. And then you could also splice out of it. So if I receive a bunch and I'm like, okay, well, I want to take some of that back on chain, I can now remove it from the channel without having to close the channel down. I could just pull it out. The capacity shrinks back down to, you know, whatever the difference is, and the channel still exists. But it goes even further than this, because you can also splice in or splice out multiple channels simultaneously. You could pull from one channel, put into another channel, really make your node more efficient without so much on-chain footprint. And you can also create splice transactions with other node runners to further amplify this effect, thus not having to spend even, you know, more on-chain fees. So it has a on-chain fee footprint improvements, it has privacy improvements, and it has Lightning Network efficiency improvements. It is the most exciting thing about Lightning right now, I think. And some people be like, oh, no, there's Taproot assets and there's all this other stuff. And yeah, there's a lot of other stuff, right? But my big focus is I want the foundational Lightning Network to be extremely efficient with as much of a minimal on-chain footprint as possible, and splicing is really, really cool.
I think you did a great job with it too. And using that same 5 million sat example, this is something that I'm not a developer, you're not a developer, so I'll just speak for myself though, that like, when, let's say we have a 5 million sat channel between the two of us, and you want to remove a million sats out, like, you know, there's more liquidity on your side, you want to remove a million sats out. In the process of doing that, the 4 million sats that is now the new balance doesn't close or run off state, meaning that like, it's not like in the process of when you're doing this during the splice that like we can no longer transact. We can still transact those 4 million sats as long as our nodes agree and there's not an issue. But it's like one of those things that it's instantaneous. Like there's no locking mechanism, or there is briefly like for a second or two when you're broadcasting the splice. But after that splice is communicated and it rebalances the channel down or even up, like you can use the liquidity between us still, which I find fascinating. It's like, I'm sure you could talk about this with liquidity providers. Like this allows for just-in-time liquidity. This allows for not fucking the states of channels that they currently have. And then maybe adding one more thing. This is kind of a concept that was added or you know, is conceptualized. I don't think it's quite there yet, but splice joins. So meaning that like you're doing a coin join into opening a channel. So you're coin joining your coins, or basically it's a way of doing how do I describe it? Coin join. Coin join is a way of a collaborative transaction to hide your privacy. And in the process of doing that, you can
help your privacy.
To help your privacy on the output, you can use the output to open up a Lightning channel. So it's basically a more private way of opening a channel, which is,
and you can take it to the next level. And if it's a Taproot open, then you don't even know it's a channel open anymore. Right now, you know, it's a channel open, but
I think there's still a little bit of developments to go there. But I think that is something that like a lot of people are kind of forecasting or seeing the future. So I think that's very, very cool. The whole,
just to rub off that a little bit, besides the Bolt 11 thing, as we were talking about in the beginning, if you pull sats, and this is just a little tip or trick, I guess, real quick. If you pull sats straight from KYC exchange and open up a channel with it on your own node, that exchange knows what your Lightning node is. So it's really, really important to do something like CoinJoin. I'm a big fan of Whirlpool.
I'm a Whirlpool guy as well.
And take those sats and open up channels after that. Just don't combine them with anything touching KYC sats. So this is something that I think maybe before starting a Lightning node, learn about coin control a little bit, learn how that stuff works. It's a very important thing to know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. Nate, it's been a great, 45 minutes here. The last question I want to ask you is, obviously you work at Voltage. Can you tell people some of the things that you guys do at Voltage? I know you guys are an awesome company, in my opinion, and just some of the services and features that you guys offer at Voltage that people might want to hear and use with their Lightning node experience that they're doing right now.
Yeah, so Voltage is, I'm pretty sure now, the longest running and largest Lightning node provider out there. We host nodes for individuals in a cloud environment. So you don't need to run your node on your own infrastructure. One thing about running a Lightning node is you do need to be online for your node to work. So this can be challenging in a lot of parts of the world, or if you're running a major business with the Lightning infrastructure as a major component, you can't really afford for your Lightning nodes to go offline. So that's sort of the major niche that Voltage is filling. However, there's tons of other stuff that we have, including Noster toolkits. We have a really, really cool analytics tool, which is sort of like a co-pilot dashboard for your node to help give you sort of insights over time. So as a business or an enterprise, you can easily optimize your node, as well as a bunch of other really cool content, YouTube channel, that sort of thing. And another thing is we are really focused on supporting the Bitcoin ecosystem. We have no interest in having sort of like a walled garden. We are very, very open. A lot of our services, you can actually plug your own node into. You don't need to run a node Voltage to use a lot of Voltage products. And this is because we're all Bitcoiners at Voltage, and we want to provide as much service as possible to those out there. So check us out, voltage.cloud. You'll see us around for sure.
Definitely. Love everything you do. Nate, if you want to plug your Twitter handle or your Noster NIP5 identifier or whatever for people to find or reach out to you, well, how could they do that?
So I'm not really on Twitter as much anymore. I'll put on my hat.
Love it.
But I still check my DMs on Twitter. So it's beef or bacon1 on Twitter. And then Noster, you could find me at nodeaddict@vlt.ge.
All right. Thank you so much, Nate. It's always a pleasure talking with you. I always appreciate your insights on Lightning and your breakdown of the current state of the Lightning network. So thanks so much. Everyone, thank you for listening to the podcast. It is a pleasure. We'll catch you on the next one. Peace.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.